This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Rotunda is the most important podcast in Florida politics. So, I mean, you know, I was happy to be able to cite to it and refer to it.
Attorney Ryan Andrews explained why his client engaged in First Amendment protected speech for saying this about Florida's Department of Corrections.
When you got to walk down a compound and be feared for your life because you don't know which way your administration is going to do to you, then it's a bad thing.
Officer Timothy Butler claims he was retaliated against after speaking out. We'll hear from one lawmaker who went to the prison to see for himself.
The stories I heard were just horrific. And I went there and looked at the facility and realized immediately that it was the wrong facility for that population.
And U.S. Representative Charlie Crist makes a special trip to Florida's Supreme Court for the retirement of one of his angels, Justice James E.C. Perry.
And be able to come here from Boston to Atlanta to Tallahassee and then back again this evening, I couldn't not be here for this great man of God. He's just wonderful. I love him to death.
All that and more coming up on episode 87 of The Rotunda. Welcome to The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. On this episode, we're going back to the beginning of our journey. Episode 2, to be exact, which was produced March of 2015. The legislative session had just started and Florida's Department of Corrections was in crisis mode following multiple reports of suspicious inmate deaths, cover-ups, and a host of other controversies leading to the ouster of former Secretary Mike Cruz and the appointment of Julie Jones to lead the department in a new direction. Jones was called to testify before lawmakers and provide updates on changes. And that's where we pick things up, at one of those committee hearings where I found Timothy Butler, a corrections officer who testified before committee with his side about the culture in Florida's prison system.
The questions and stuff that they asked went real good, but the question that we wanted to, the answers that we really want to give them for what's everything going on, we didn't get that.
So now that you have the chance to tell what's really going on, mm-hmm. here on the Rotunda, what's really going on?
One, we need more help. We need more officers. Number two, we got to make sure that our safety is first. We can understand that we definitely need a raise. We know that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is our safety first and the way that they're treating the employees. We are more or less treated just like we're the inmates, and that's bad. And when you walk down a compound and you're nervous about walking down a compound that you work at because you're scared that you're going to get either hit by an inmate or either better yet, you have your own staff members won't even come to your rescue. That has happened at my compound. So, you know, a lot of that stuff is going on. But again, like I said, what the public don't know is what DOC is not telling them. They tell them only what they want them to know.
So what did the department say? Well, back then, in a report by NPR, Secretary Jones is quoted as saying there wasn't a crisis when looking at the record number of inmate deaths. She also dismissed charges from prison guards turned whistleblowers that there have been cover-ups. She called them a group of disgruntled employees.
What should we know? What's really going on?
I think more or less what's going on, we got a lot of retaliation going on is our biggest thing. Because what we say, we're going to get retaliated against one way or the other. Secretary say we won't, but we are.
So this 2015 interview of Timothy Butler is listed in court documents as protected speech filed by his attorney, Ryan Andrews, son of Steve Andrews, who's frequently battling against Governor Rick Scott's administration.
So my office represents an individual named Tim Butler. Who is currently engaged in litigation against multiple individuals from the Department of Corrections, one of which who is Jeff Beasley, for First Amendment retaliation. And it started when he went on television in November of 2014 and talked about all these different things that were going on at Jefferson Correctional Institute. And he began to be retaliated against, and he ultimately testified in front of Senator Evers' committee, the Criminal Justice Committee in the Florida Senate. And he, you know, he talked about everything that was going on. I mean, some things people knew, some things people didn't. You know, the severe short staffing, employees sneaking contraband in for inmates, inappropriate relationships between superiors and employees, very different things. Even some people were sneaking drugs in to the prisons. And so he testified in front of the Senate committee, and then a few days later he appeared on The Rotunda, which was good to see. And, you know, I guess that would have been his then third protected activity was, you know, being on your show, which I don't know if anyone could say that before, that it was considered a protected activity for them to be on here. But it's certain, you know, a lot of people may have been able to.
So what kind of retaliation did Butler allege?
At some point in that time frame, he was transferred away from Jefferson Correctional Institute, and, you know, different things happened to him that, you know, again, have been alleged in his lawsuit. But he got less hours. He was given a much less desirable position. And he was kind of looked down upon amongst the people who he worked with because of, really stepping up and speaking out about what they all were feeling, but not everyone had, you know, the courage to say. From there, you know, he tried to put as much time in as he can. He was still scared for his life, you know, and in some of the places he had to go. But he ultimately returned back to Jefferson Correctional Institute, and when he filed his lawsuit that's currently pending, he was given a promotion 2 weeks later, which is pretty interesting.
So, you file a lawsuit and you get a promotion. Was that to shut him up, or what?
I mean, I don't think that's how people usually get promoted, but, you know, I mean, I think it's, I know what my theory is, at least in as it relates to this case, as to why he got it. Although I believe he was a good employee, I mean, I think it's very serendipitous that he gets promoted right after. So,
here is more of that 2015 interview.
Are you worried about what will happen to you after your presentation today in committee?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
What do you think might happen to you?
More or less the same thing that's been going on with me all the while, because they've been retaliating me because based on some of the things that I brought to their attention of what was going on and stuff. And so the retaliation is it's going to be there. There ain't no way they can not. DOC has been run there. She may be trying to come in to do a good job, but she got what they call the good old boy system right behind her, and that's where it's going to hurt her at.
So about the culture, Butler claims it is deep-rooted, corruption all around. At the time, I wanted to know if he was hopeful about the new leadership in Secretary Jones.
Our job is care, custody, and control of all inmates, and regardless of whether they're black, white, or whatever. But when you got to walk down a compound and be feared for your life because you don't know which way your administration is going to do to you, then it's a bad thing. And this is not our administration, but just dealing with the one that we're dealing with now, yeah, it's a lot of problems.
What do you think about the top of the administration and the changes that has been occurring with the different secretaries to the one that you have now?
Well, I think Secretary Cruz was on a good point right up until the end. But now with Secretary Jones coming in, I think more or less what you're watching is based in politics again. I think more or less if she was given the opportunity, like she are given now, to try to straighten it out. But the biggest thing is it's still got some people behind her. And you cannot get answers from the correction officers when you got the warden, the captain, the colonel, and all these people that sitting there that enforcing these rules that they're supposed to be sending down when they're the one who corrupting the whole place. So, you know, you said that the officers are your field soldiers, footwork soldiers. Well, if we're the soldiers, why are we not getting listened to? Why are we getting blamed for everything? Why are we getting have to change our lives around because of, you know, personal bandana stuff against your officers and stuff? Why are we getting done that? And these new rules and regulation that they came in today, you know, the different Senate bills and stuff, yeah, it's good, you know, to a certain extent to all of them. But the biggest thing what we need right now, we need help, especially at my institution, because, like I said, the morale is so low that at any given time right now, the way I feel now, I feel like somebody is sooner or later going to get hurt or either better yet going to get killed out there.
After taking on Butler's case, attorney Ryan Andrews started taking on more, pretty much becoming a subject matter expert on Florida's Department of Corrections, where employees frequently contacted him to air their grievances.
Well, it's interesting. That case started with the death of Randall Jordan Aparo, who is a name that is probably all too familiar in the state of Florida. He was an inmate that was killed at Franklin Correctional Institute. And I represented, or this office represented, about five individuals who essentially blew the whistle on what happened to him and the cover-up into his death. Where this started in 2013, when my clients first reported it, to where it ended up, felt like a decade because of all of the acts the Department of Corrections was taking against my clients. Two of them were demoted. Most of them were pulled from the field and put in small closets up at headquarters in Tallahassee, and really were shamed and disgraced from over 2 years, and had to deal with things that people shouldn't have to deal with for trying to disclose a cover-up of the death of an inmate. So when that came to head and my clients got demoted, we started having, you know, one-offs of the main litigation. We had the first complaint review board and compliance review hearing convened on behalf of Doug Glisson, the Department of Corrections history. So that was a big victory, not just for officers in the Department of Corrections, but I think all law enforcement officers as it relates to their Bill of Rights and the rights that they have that are granted to them by the statutes of Florida to protect them in their job and the decisions they make. We were able to finally settle it, and it resulted in three of my clients having to resign from the Department of Corrections, which I think was appropriate. Two of them stayed, but you know, it just came a time where I think the Department of Corrections is now trying to walk on the right path and really start fixing and cleaning up their Inspector General's office. And I think their new Inspector General, Lester Fernandez, is the man to do it, and he's shown that so far.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. So the stories attorney Ryan Andrews hears are disturbing.
There was a prison with female prisoners who didn't have access to feminine products, so they were having to tear up sheets to use the sheets as feminine products.
But what about solutions to the problems? Andrews will share what he thinks should be done. And later we'll hear a remarkable story from one lawmaker, Representative David Richardson, who took matters into his own hands.
About 14 months ago, I made my first visit to a prison. And I had never been to a prison before, but I use a state law we have that allows any sitting state legislator to show up unannounced and walk right in.
All right, we're back with attorney Ryan Andrews.
It's just not right, you know, and now you read recently that inmates are going without hot water for weeks at a time, you know, and the Department of Corrections is obviously not an easy place to spend your time, but when you have all of these ancillary conditions, you know, no access to feminine products, no hot water, you know, food that's been tainted, that certainly contributes to the morale and the mood in the prisons and has led to riots. It's something that is easy to address. It's just everyone has to buy into the vision. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that's the case with, you know, the wardens right now. I mean, if the wardens bought into Secretary Jones's goals and vision for the Department of Corrections, I think you would see a very quick turnaround. And you wouldn't hear so much negative news from the Department of Corrections. I mean, Secretary Jones has gone over to the legislature and demanded additional funding, you know, and she deserves it. The Department of Corrections deserves it. The ratio, I've heard ratios at some prisons of one officer to 125 inmates. I don't see how anyone could work in that condition and not fear for their life, right? They need additional funding for raises, attract more employees, and better employees. And the legislature, you know, it's clear they want to help. You know, they had all the hearings in 2015. They take it seriously. But a significant amount of money needs to be added to the Department of Corrections budget so they can make these changes.
what can the legislature do? Well, ahead of the 2017 legislative session, committees will once again meet before and during to address Florida's prison issues. But I had a conversation with Democratic Representative David Richardson of Miami, who wanted to remind people, especially incoming freshman legislators, that you don't have to be the most powerful to affect change.
People say to me, oh, you can't get anything done when you're in the minority party. Well, I've closed a prison.
Let's hear how he did it.
You know, one's effectiveness as a legislator should not be judged by merely what we do in this building. So I would, now that I've been here 4 years, I would tell new members to find an issue that you believe in. It would be great if it's a bipartisan issue, and then spend time on that issue, even if you don't do anything on the issue within these walls. And I'll give you an example. About 14 months ago, I made my first visit to a prison. And I had never been to a prison before, but I use a state law we have that allows any sitting state legislator to show up unannounced and walk right in. And
I remember that. Yeah.
So I was troubled by some of the things I saw on my first visit, and so I've made subsequent visits. And I did that work very, very quietly until a reporter found out that I was doing it and came and talked to me. But I have, in the last 14 months, made about 60 visits to prisons all over the state of Florida. The latter visits are all unannounced. My earlier visits were scheduled as I was learning how I wanted to do my visits. I've interviewed about 225 inmates. I've negotiated with the Secretary of Corrections on how I would do those interviews so that I feel like I have an ability to ask tough questions and get tough answers from inmates without the scrutiny of security personnel standing next to me or the person. And that's gone extremely well. And you know, it's an issue that I'm not really working on within these walls as much as I am on outside, you know?
Yeah, I remember that story. What were your findings? What was the takeaway from that experience?
So I was troubled by my first visit, and which I went with Kathleen Peters, another representative, and we were troubled by what we saw in one of the youthful offender camps within Sumter. And a few weeks after that visit, I read a horrific article in the Miami Herald newspaper about some alleged abuse, inmate-on-inmate abuse within the youthful offender program. So my background is in forensic auditing, and I decided to take it on as a project to see if something like that was really happening. And so I began visiting work release facilities and so forth so I could find people who had served time at Lancaster and get their stories, and because I wanted to be briefed up before I went there. And the stories I heard were just horrific. And I went there and looked at the facility and realized immediately that it was the wrong facility for that population. And so I took all my findings to the secretary and gave her my findings and told her that I thought that it was an inappropriate facility. It should be closed for that population. And she said she would think about it. And then she came back to me in February of this year and told me that she would close it as a YO camp at the end of June, and it was closed at the end of May. So I feel very, you know, when people say to me, oh, you can't get anything done when you're in the minority party, well, I've closed a prison, you know?
Yeah.
So by being willing to invest the time to become more knowledgeable than others, and then you have the facts, and they can't be refuted. So, you know, I would not have been able to accomplish that if I hadn't spent all the time. And then as I was doing that work, I discovered that Sumter was really a place where we started, where was probably ground zero for officer on inmate abuse, beatings and choking and punching and kicking and slapping. And so then I began the work of correcting that. And I've spent a lot of time. I've probably been on 15 different visits to Sumter, gave my findings to the secretary, the the secretary cleaned house there about 4 months ago, mm-hmm. and was very happy about that. And the top five management people have all been replaced. There's a new warden there with a new idea on what needs to be done. And I would say that I've probably shut down almost all of the violence that was being perpetrated by guards on youthful offenders by showing up and looking for bruises on somebody's face and asking tough questions.
Well, I'm impressed, and thank you so much for that story and showing what you can do, even within the minority party, and stepping outside of your, like, you know, what you may not have a bill, but you can do beyond that. So
exactly.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to visit rotundapodcast.com to learn more about this program and to invite you to support everything we do here. There is a donate button on rotundapodcast.com. Your generous support is what keeps this program going. You can also become an underwriter by contacting me at rotundapodcast.com. Also, you can follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Welcome back to The Rotunda. I had the unique honor of hanging out with all seven justices of Florida's Supreme Court, including four who call themselves, get this, Charlie's Angels.
Good morning, Angels.
If you're wondering why they jokingly call themselves Charlie's Angels, well, they are the four justices appointed by then-Governor Charlie Crist, who was recently elected to Congress. Crist was busy going through his freshman orientation courses at Harvard University when he pulled away to make a special trip back to Tallahassee to say, see you later, to one of his angels, Justice James E.C. Perry, who will leave the court at the end of the year because of the mandatory retirement age. I believe it's 70.
Is the noise all right for you?
I will work with
this.
You
know what? Well, I'll tell you, you don't have to.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Charlie Crist many know. Personable and accommodating. Always a fun interview.
Quiet and talk to my reporter friend. Is that all right?
You can have my office if you want.
Why don't we do that?
He arranges for us to do our sit-down interview in the court marshal's office, but bumped into several justices along the way.
Hey, God bless you.
Hey, listen.
How are you?
Yeah. Good. I saw the thing where they had a thing on MSNBC where you went, everybody else was doing the sign of the cross, and then you got up to pick your office.
Yes.
Did
yes.
it very gentlemanly, and then you
I did, young man.
Good to see you. Congratulations on your retirement.
You look so terrific. But listen.
You're sweet.
We've got some important issues.
What a fascinating exchange to see. Lobbying never ends.
Pharrell's very efficient.
Right?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much. It's just shocking to me to see that this is the first time people are actually seeing you since your victorious election. How does it feel getting the congratulations and touching base with all of these powerful constituents?
Well, they're obviously just very gracious people. And, you know, we're in the holiday season time. Christmas is upon us very soon. And it just makes me grateful to God. And these wonderful people that I have the opportunity to spend time with, particularly Justice Perry, to have this ceremony for his retirement and be able to come here from Boston to Atlanta to Tallahassee and then back again this evening. I couldn't not be here for this great man of God. He's just wonderful. I love him to death.
Why did you pick him? As I remember and recall back, as a Republican governor and getting a whole lot of pushback and suggestions for others, why did you pick Justice Perry?
Well, it was the same with the approximately other 150 judges I picked. But, you know, when it's a Supreme Court appointment, it takes on a heightened significance to you. Certainly it did to me, you know, as former Attorney General especially. But the thing I always looked for in any person to go on the bench was their heart, their compassion, their kindness, and their decency. Because on any given day, one of my fellow Floridians could be before them. And if they didn't have that kind of compassion and empathy, it wouldn't be appropriate for them to be on the bench and dispense justice. But in Justice Perry, it was, you know, so exponentially evident that he contained all those qualities of decency and kindness and compassion to his fellow man. It was an easy choice in the face of fierce opposition, and I was proud to do it.
So I've been hearing the jokes, Charlie's Angels. How does it feel to be losing one of your angels?
Well, we're not losing him. You know, I think one of the other speakers today said it very well, that Justice Perry can't help but continue to do good in his life. You know, like helping mentor young people who may not be as privileged as some others, like he has done with the Jackie Robinson Athletic Association in Central Florida. And so I know that he will continue. He is not a lost angel. He's a risen angel.
The remaining angels include two conservatives, Ricky Polston and Charles Kennedy, along with the more moderate Jorge Labarga. Perry, who is known for voting with the court's liberal wing, including Peggy Quince, Labarga, and Barbara Perriente, says he's extremely happy to see an outpouring of support, a packed courtroom, for his send-off.
I feel absolutely blessed. I never expected to be able to sit at the highest court in this state or any other state, because when I was growing up, I couldn't sit at the lunch counters in my hometown. So this was a tremendous blessing, and it was very emotional, and to have so many people show up when you're leaving is really astonishing. Now, when you first come in, everybody wants to come in, kiss the ring, but to come when you no longer do anything for them, that is truly amazing.
Yeah, it was nearly it was pretty much a packed house, outside seating as well. So, what do you remember most, or what do you, when looking back, maybe tomorrow in the coming weeks, when you sit back and realize it came to an end, what will you remember as your fondest memory on the court?
That I did the best I could with what I had.
What do you make of Governor Charlie Crist, now Congressman-elect Charlie Crist, as one of his Charlie's Angels?
We didn't meet in his office. We met at the airport in Orlando, but, you know, he's getting a little old, so he can't remember right. But but he was right about what he said was that come in and sit down and have a seat, make yourself comfortable. I said, I'm always comfortable. Now, I wasn't trying to be smart. It just came out just like that, you know. And then when he called me to tell him I had an appointment, there was a 727 area code, and I knew Tallahassee was 850, so I thought it was one of my buddies playing a trick on me. So I said, yeah, right. He said, no, this is Charlie's. Yeah, okay. He said, you remember when you came in the room, I said, have a seat, and you said, make yourself comfortable, you said, always comfortable. Then you were it. So that's what I remember about that.
That's good.
And that's Justice James E.C. Perry, whose kids gave an inspirational tribute to the way he ruled in the House, all with encouragement. So it's now time to fill the vacancy. The Supreme Court Judicial Nominating Commission sent three names to Governor Rick Scott to choose from. Fifth District Court of Appeal Chief Judge C. Allen Lawson, Appellate Judge Wendy Berger, and Orlando lawyer Dan Gerber. According to News Service of Florida's Derek Ham, Gerber once worked to keep ex-Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke off Florida's presidential ballot in 1992, and the judges pledge use of judicial restraint. Charlie Crist.
This leaves an opening for Governor Rick Scott to leave his lasting impression on the history of Florida. What, if you may, advice for him in choosing the next justice?
Well, far be it for me to give advice to my successor, but I would simply say that I hope he reaches into his heart shares with God how important such a decision is, and prays for guidance.
All right, so what's in store for Congressman Charlie Crist? What are his priorities? How will he deal after picking the worst, the absolute worst office assignment in Congress?
You know, the higher it is, the worse it is. Well, I picked number 50, so it couldn't have been any worse in terms of the pick. But somebody reminded me that, you know, the last shall be the first. And that it comes actually from the Bible and the book of Matthew 20:16. Mm-hmm. 20:16.
We'll have our extended interview with Representative Charlie Crist on our next episode, our final episode of the year. Until then, special thanks to attorney Steve Andrews. And here's a little bit more from our conversation on what he hopes will happen to address the issues in Florida's prisons.
Inmates, I think, are more likely now to speak out as to what's going on with them. because I think they've seen that they can have a voice, mm-hmm. and they don't have to just put up with injustice simply because they're in prison. But unfortunately, you can't just walk in and ask to talk to people. Yeah. It's a culture that's difficult to change, but I think it really starts with more funding for more employees and better employees, and that includes wardens. I mean, and again, Secretary Jones is clearly the person to lead corrections back into the light and out of this darkness that they've been in for the past 4 or 5 years. But they need to give her the tools and the power to do that.
And who's the they?
Well, I mean, I think the first would be the legislature. Again, it's clear they want to help, but the best thing that they can do is give them more funding, maybe even hold more of these hearings, right? Call the wardens in to come and speak to them. Each of the wardens where these things have happened. I mean, Franklin Correctional Institute. If I was on the Criminal Justice Committee, I would want that warden in my committee room answering questions, because that's really, they're the best to be able to have this, to have all these things that go on in prisons disclosed.
Of course, we will extend an invitation to the Florida Department of Corrections to have Secretary Jones here on the program in the new year. They are always welcome, along with all agency heads. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Thanks to Congressman Charlie Crist for being on the program and the friendly staff at Florida's Supreme Court. Also, of course, our intern, John Hines, for his great work on each episode. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com, take a moment to fill out our listener survey, and be sure to join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.